The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for The Incredible Hulk Returns from 1989. If you do not wish to have this movie spoilt, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Was it the ultimate 80s team-up of Marvel characters, or was it a case of premature Ragnarok? We watched The Incredible Hulk Returns from 1988 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to The Rufus Project, and this time around we are checking out Your Incredible Hulk Returns from 1988. Now I'm saying we, this is a bit of a special episode, Christian is still absent, so we have got a returning champion to the podcast, and he's going to think that I've typecast him in talking about Marvel TV movies. So I'm Trevor Holland, by the way, and I am joined by my very special co-host, Chris Richards. Chris, how are you this evening?
Premature Ragnarok'd.
Yeah, it seemed appropriate.
No, I'm good. Thank you very much for having me back, Trevor. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Now, for those who don't recall, I had Chris on previously. Now, Chris is a very talented actor, musician, DJ, and composer.
Oh, stop it.
You are. And previously he was on, last time he was on, he was talking about the Doctor Strange television movie from the late 70s.
Yes, indeed.
So we've got him back.
Strange by name, strange by nature.
Oh, indeed. But we've got him. We've got you back to talk about The Incredible Hulk Returns from the late 80s.
Mm. Yeah, now, look, I tell you, this was an interesting film in that I love a bit of camp, but this was still kind of painful to watch.
Oh, you know, don't hold back there. Now, if anybody out there wants to know what The Incredible Hulk Returns is about, I've got a little synopsis here, culled from IMDb.
Hang on, I'll give you some theme music. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Hopefully on the verge of curing his Hulk condition, Banner meets his colleague, Don Blake, who is mystically linked to a Viking warrior, Thor.
Oh, are we done?
Yes, we're done.
Well, that's actually very succinct for IMDb, I must say.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's a little one-line thing rather than the description, which goes on forever.
Mm.
So yes, indeed, this is a team-up between Hulk and Thor almost 30 years prior to the big hit Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, and actually, if I recall correctly, there'd been a couple of comic book TV shows, like The Incredible Spider-Man from 1970s and everything. Mm-hmm. A couple of others that are just like slipping my mind at the moment because my brain is permanently fogged these days. But to the best of my knowledge, this was the first time that two separate Marvel characters had been teamed together in one TV show or movie or whatever. It was the very first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a little bit of trivia about that, which we will get to, of course. Probably move on to the turkey trivia. This is rated 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb, so surprisingly high.
Mm-hmm.
And this TV movie was also meant to serve as a pilot for a proposed Thor TV series that, funnily enough, never went into production.
Actually, another bit of offshoot trivia, I've actually seen the preview of that particular pilot.
Ooh.
And yeah, it was as bad as you'd think.
Right, yeah, so they decided to just go with the team up with the Hulk movie instead to get him out there.
Yeah, like they had exactly the same actor that played Thor in this movie in the pilot, but yeah, never went anywhere.
Rightio. Another surprise appearance, seeing this name in the opening credits before I even looked at the trivia, being Charles Napier, of all people. He actually guest starred twice on the original Hulk TV series as different characters, and he also provided the growling sounds for the Hulk on the show.
Yes, indeed. Actually, and another little cameo, which actually quite impressed me, was the actor Tim Thomason. Now, he was in one of my favourite ultra-violent, schlocky cult movies of all time, Time Cop. He played Jack Death.
Oh, I have not seen Time Cop for a very, very long time.
Oh, look, there's a suggestion for a redeeming features for you, because there's a lot to redeem in that movie. It's dreadful, but it's awesome dreadful.
Oh, yeah, I've just put up a picture of him, and it's like, yeah, I know that face. I do know that face well. He's been in quite a few dodgy action movies. There we go.
Yes, he has. But you know, he does the B movie role thing really well.
He does.
To give him his credit.
He was quite sinister in this as well. Good on him. The last bit of trivia I've got is, because this is an offshoot of the old Hulk TV series from the 80s, but the producer of the Hulk TV series prior to this was completely unaware of this film until he began seeing ads for it on TV.
Ain't that a kick in the teeth?
Yep, absolutely.
And
no idea about it.
And they even used the same theme music, the same opening from the original TV series, the same end music, the same sad David Banner hitchhiking down the road scenery. And it was actually meant to be the first of three incredible TV Hulk movies made after the CBS TV show ended in 1982. The second movie was The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which was aired in 1989. And the third and final movie, The Death of the Incredible Hulk, which aired in 1990.
Yeah, I believe one of those also had a Daredevil appearance, actually. Just to, this was their attempt to get the whole crossover universe going well before our current spate of blockbuster MCU ones.
Yeah, it just goes to prove that nothing is original anymore.
Very, very true. Now, before we talk more about the movie itself, because I can pretty tell we're raring to go, what we'd like to do is set a baseline. So we are working to see if this can be redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to know what we're working from. So I've grabbed a review. The review is simply titled Terrible Movie. I like the Hulk series, but this movie made Lou Ferrigno look bad and the acting was terrible. Bill Bixby even was not his normal acting self. The Hulk looked worn out from how he looked compared to how he looked in the series. Do yourself a favour, pass on this one. One star.
Well, fooey to you, Mr. One Star.
I was actually, starting this movie, I was actually kind of hopeful that being a TV movie, that they would have, you know, not made it all that long to allow for ad breaks to pad it out. But then it's like, hang on, how is this 93 minutes long? It's actually the length of a movie. So it would have been like 2 hours on TV at the time. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. They, considering what American TV is like, they would have had a few 10-minute ad breaks in there so you could get up, make some coffee, move around a bit and everything.
I don't think it was that bad in the late 80s.
But, oh, look, yeah, I've seen longer Ages Enough specials.
That sounds even more painful than watching these sort of things.
It is, believe me.
But you did mention that it had the same starts with the some nice, lovely, dodgy... I mean, the technology in the background looked like it was more akin to a 70s movie than an 80s movie. Well,
actually, funnily enough, I thought in this movie, in general, I thought the background tech and hardware was, you know, surprisingly good, surprisingly high budget. It was high-low budget. if there is such a thing. It actually looked pretty good.
It looked better further in the movie, but because they basically pulled the opening from the TV show, that didn't.
Mm. And regarding, what's his name, terrible movie, one star, fooey to you, buddy, comment, about Bill Bixby not acting like you'd normally see him, I think it's because of part of the plot at the start of the movie, which we should probably get into explaining the actual movie.
Mm. Well, I thought the start of the movie where we have the lady walking on the beach and out comes Bill Bixby with a pot of coffee holding it up. It was like a coffee commercial.
It almost was, yeah.
And their breakfast sweet talk is like, oh, lovey-dovey, I've got a dark secret.
Mm.
That I can't tell you. That's not romantic, dude.
No, well, see, I think why it was a little jarring considering how the TV series was is that it's weird to see Bill Bixby's David Banner happy. You know, he never once seemed like a happy guy on the TV show, you know? And seeing him content with a girlfriend who adores him and a solid job at that stage is kind of jarring, you know, if you're used to the David Banner that you saw in the TV series.
Yeah, I mean, they did give you a little bit of the back because, he had the nightmare at the very, very start, including flashbacks to stuff that we had just seen in the opening titles, which, you know, I've always loved when these things double up, but doubling up, like, straight away is refreshing. It doesn't normally happen. They normally give you a little bit of time before they rehash the same material.
That's the thing. It's a completely different bit of material before they start rehashing stuff. At the start of the movie, at the commencement of the whole thing, Banner's actually managed to live a pretty decent life since the end of the TV show. He has a steady girlfriend who adores him and wants to marry him, who is Maggie Shaw, is played quite well by Lee Purcell. He has a great job that allows him to conduct the kind of research he wants to. Hint, it's all about gamma ray stuff. And he hasn't transformed into the Hulk in like 4 years. It's almost as if he's finally at peace.
Yeah, and yes, to hold the Hulk at bay, he just pictures his sweetheart, his science sweetheart, we might add. She's also a scientist.
His science sweetie.
Science sweetie. So, and like, she does have a bit of agency, well, at least for a while, she has a bit of agency and a bit of independence before she inevitably becomes a helpless damsel.
Mm.
But it was good to see, a fairly strong female lead for at least the first half of the movie.
It was better than the female leads that we saw in Doctor Strange, I gotta say that much.
That's very, very true. I don't know, but Garner kicked butt.
Oh, yeah, true.
She was a bad guy, so she had to kick butt.
Yeah, true, yeah. Why is it that female villains are always given much more agency and independence than female heroes or heroines? It seems to be a bit of a trope in a lot of these older movies, and even today.
Yeah, well, you know, the damsel trope is slowly dying, but very, very, very slowly dying.
Honestly, it couldn't die fast enough for me.
Fair enough.
But I tell you what, on with the motley. Let's get on with it.
Absolutely. As soon as I say that there's going to be an unlimited energy from this machine that Banner's working on that just happens to double as a potential cure for himself.
Mm, I think it was a gamma transponder.
But it's again, oh, yep, someone's either going to try to stop that or steal that.
Yeah, and there's the movie's MacGuffin. That's when his perfect life starts to unravel, because this gamma transponder doohickey generates all sorts of publicity, and that's attention that Banner has never, ever wanted. Like, even at the start of the movie, you see him, he's working under an assumed name, Banyan or something. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, I know. Very David Banyan as opposed to David Banner. Good, yes. Good pseudonym there, guys. Oh, dear. The machine itself looks kind of dodgy, but the amount of applause it gets, that applause goes forever.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's crazy.
But, you know, it's worth the applause because it runs off a CD-ROM, which was super high-tech for the time.
Oh, yeah. Like it reminds me of the old that old meme of this ancient computer guy from the early 80s holding up 5.5-inch floppy going, "Hey, baby, I've got 5.6 megabytes of porn on this bad boy."
Very low grainy.
Yes.
Very, yeah. Poor quality. Anyway.
Yes, right. Onward.
But one thing I did think is that, because they make a very big show of Bender as he's getting ready to run the machine to cure himself, which happens very early at the starting, so you know something's going to go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But he's providing very detailed information about what he's doing, the machine, himself and his life into this little tape deck. And you're thinking, oh, that's going to fall into the wrong hands. And they even have a long shot of it just sitting on the desk unattended. And you're thinking, okay, what's going to happen with this? And nothing does.
Nothing does.
It never comes up again in the entire movie.
But see, that's the thing. It doesn't need to, because at the same time as all this stuff is going on, well-known scientist named Donald Blake, who was also a former either student or colleague, I think, and portrayed by Steve Levitt, shows up to confront Banner on his secret life, because somehow Donald Blake has worked out that David Banner is really the Hulk and wants to know what the heck his deal is. Like, why does Banner still want the world to think he's dead?
Yeah, I think he mainly came to Banner because he thought Banner could help explain, like, Don thought Banner could help explain his problem.
Yeah, well, he's got his own weirdness going on, doesn't he?
Yeah. And that weirdness is inevitably what causes him to see Banner transform to Hulk.
Yeah. And to make a long story short, and by long story, I mean a long goddamn story. Seriously, Blake's Viking story seems to go on forever. It's exposition, not a goddamn novel, man. Seriously. But, to make a long story short, Blake now possesses a magic hammer that, when he yells out, Odin! Conjures up the Viking demigod Thor, who is played by Eric Kramer. It's a ridiculous story. Completely ridiculous. But the thing is, it's actually true to how Thor came into the human world in the Marvel comics. So kudos to getting that right.
Except Don was his, like, human alter ego as opposed to a separate person in the comics. That's about the only difference.
True enough. But at least they got the name right.
Yeah, well, I did see in the closing credits that Stan Lee was a consultant, so I'm sure Stan was making sure a few of the boxes were ticked.
Well, he's considering that he's a consultant on all of them, maybe he saw this and went, "That's not right," and started signing on as a consultant to make sure that certain boxes got ticked.
Quite possibly. You're going to use Thor, you're going to get it right. Excelsior! I can't do Stan
Lee. Excelsior! I can't really do him either. I just do my old man voice.
Yeah, but I think that he wasn't a particularly old man at the time either. This is like 30 years ago, so.
No.
And as he was getting ready to summon Thor for the first time for Banner's benefit to prove that he wasn't suffering from altitude sickness or whatever Banner thought he was suffering from, and he's standing there. He's just basically sitting there getting the hammer out, and it's just dramatic music is just going boom, 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 boom.
They got that awesome, like, late 70s, early 80s suspenseful music going. If you didn't know, folks, I'm a massive soundtrack nerd. So, yeah.
You would have loved some of the stuff then, Chris.
Mm. So Blake demonstrates his new hammer power right in Banner's lab and brings Thor to life. And the thing about this Thor is, if your only exposure has been as the Chris Hemsworth as Thor, you would probably absolutely laugh your ass off at Eric Kramer's Thor, because he's basically this gigantic blonde meathead.
Mm-hmm. And his costume looks so very cheap.
Oh my god, it's bad. It's real bad. Oh dear. So Odin has ordered Thor to do heroic acts before he can enter Valhalla. But Donald has a similar problem as Banner, because Thor has fully become integrated into his personality.
And Don doesn't really want to go out of his way to do good things.
No, he doesn't. But so he brings Thor to life, an event that causes Banner to grow angry and Hulk out. And so Eric Kramer and Lou Ferrigno have one of the most ridiculous slow motion fights I have ever seen.
Very little actual fighting going along, and a lot of the Hulk flexing and posing.
Yeah.
While Charles Napier goes,
and the thing is, you can see by the camera, by the end product of the camera, that they slowed the camera down. They filmed in fast motion and they slowed it down at regular speed for Hulk's bits. But to see Thor pretending to move in slow motion while the camera is recording at normal speed, that was just, oh my god.
The fight was, let's throw them into the wall a couple of times, break some machinery, cause something to roll down a handily placed ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And then jump out the window.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And that means that they get seen by the public because the fight spills out onto the street, which is not a good look.
No, and it ends with Hulk running down the street.
Mm.
Yes, until the following morning where we find out that, yes, David Banner does steal clothes, but at least he pays for them. He's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the least he could do, really, seriously.
Yeah. And if you think Thor looked ridiculous in his full Viking get-up, I think when he turned up in his casual clothes, he looked even weirder.
Yeah, true enough. But then, it's at this point that we see the big bads of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's at this point that we learn that Zach Lambert, who is played by Jay Baker, who is the younger brother of the lab owner Joshua Lambert, played by John Gabriel, is in cahoots with an unscrupulous guy called Jack LeBeau, who is Tim Thomason. Yay, Tim Thomason!
Woo! He was, I mean, he was nice and sinister. I think he really did bring a good game to this movie.
He did. But one thing that confused me a little bit about this movie was the character's name, Jack LeBeau. Right?
Yep.
Now, LeBeau, very obviously a Cajun name. His entire gang are Cajuns. And then all of a sudden, maybe like 5, 10 years later in the Marvel X-Men comics, we have a Cajun mutant whose name is Remy LeBeau, who is known by his name Gambit.
Wow.
Mm.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, this could have been a presaging, could have been a rip-off, I don't know.
But what confused me about him was, because you also had Charles Napier. For some reason, I thought it was talking about his brother at some point, so I thought that Charles Napier was his brother, but he's like Mike Fausch or something. So I wasn't too sure, and he does get treated like an employee at one point.
Yeah, he's like the number one henchman, sort of thing.
Yeah, and then they're like sitting at the table like buddies later, so I don't know.
And LeBeau is, as far as I could tell, some sort of black market criminal dude who'll sell important technology to the highest bidder, and LeBeau wants to steal the transponder and sell it to a foreign government that might want it for some reason. I mean, I'm still unclear why, outside of using the transponder to reverse Banner's anger management issues, the transponder's such a big deal, that never really gets explained.
Unlimited energy.
Oh, right.
It's just one line. Just one line.
Yeah. Unlimited energy!
Unlimited energy!
Yeah, for Star Wars fans out there, it doesn't quite have the same punch, does it? But anyway. But the way everyone talks about it, evil people all over the world would sell their souls for the chance to have it in their arsenal, man. And
There was also the plan to kidnap... Banyan as well.
Banyan.
For a potential ransom and probably to help with the machine.
Mm. And Zach is all about giving it to LeBeau because he feels as though his brother Joshua doesn't respect him. The sibling rivalry. The sibling rivalry.
Indeed. And pretty much the bad guys... I suppose acting-wise, we're probably the best performers. I mean, Charles Napier always puts in a good effort.
Yeah, he does. He's just a really good actor. The stuff I've seen him in, I cannot fault him at all.
Yeah. Like, when he turns up, he immediately exudes menace and confidence, which, again, was kind of a big surprise in the same movie where... Thor gets summoned in a dodgy flat and his appearance is somewhat diminished by the fact that he's got a set of Venetian blinds immediately behind him.
Yeah, good point. Oh, dear. And so, yeah, LeBeau brings in Fouché. That sounds like such a sucky Disney name. You know, it's like Gaston's second banana behind LeFou in Beauty and the Beast. What, LeFou isn't available? Get me Fouché.
Fouché. It's time to Fouché stuff up. That was a bad line. Okay.
Oh, God. So he brings in Fouché to help Zach come up with a scheme to get the transponder, and then stuff happens. Now, by this time, I was actually a little bit confused and more than a bit overtired because I'd been up playing EVE Online for like about 16 hours straight.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I think before we go too much more on the plot, I do want to take a little bit of time out because the movie took a bit of time out itself for just a whole bonding session between Don and Thor after Banner basically insists that Don get to know Thor better.
Yeah.
And they go out to a biker bar.
That was a lovely bit of comedy.
And this is the point
that's
where
like,
I started...
That's like how you have fun in the 1980s!
Absolutely. And this is when I started to actually kind of start liking Thor. He was just this fun-loving guy who... Basically, all he wanted to do was to beat evil down with a hammer and have a good time.
And drink lots of beer.
Absolutely. Downing.
That's how you had fun in the 80s, man. Chugging beers, flirting with girls, picking random bar fights. And that probably made Thor feel like, well, who needs Valhalla? I've got it right here, baby.
He was having a great, and even the guys he ended up fighting with are all best of friends by the end of the night.
Right? They have respect for a worthy enemy.
Yes, indeed. And their girlfriends had a lot of respect for for a Thor. Well, yeah, they're all over him.
Mjolnir isn't his only magic hammer.
No, oh dear. Is that a Mjolnir in your pants? Are you happy to see me?
Okay, I think we've reached our quota of smut for one podcast.
It's a good thing I can try to keep this PG.
Oh, dear. And as well as that, as a little bitty subplot, they've brought Jack Colvin back as Jack McGee, the nosy reporter that was... dogging Banner all the way through the TV series, trying to expose Hulk's identity.
Yes, indeed.
Good old Jack McGee.
Yep, and he never actually sets sight on either Banner or the Hulk, I believe. He's always just missing out, or Banner sees him and then quickly ducks around the corner.
Yeah, I know.
So he gets all these secondhand reports, but he never, like, he's trying so hard to find the Hulk and find the secret behind the Hulk, but he can never actually get first-hand experience.
Mm, and yeah, these days, honestly, Jack McGee would be working for News Corp reporting for The Australian or something. He's that bad.
Or maybe even News.com.
Ooh, politics! Politics!
Yeah, anyway.
And we digress.
We digress yet again. That's always a good sign. But yeah, back to the main plot, when they try to kidnap Banner and everything goes wrong. And
yeah.
Of course, Hulk's out again and throws him around the reception area of the lab.
Because, of course, superheroes need something important to do.
Indeed they do. And mind you, his girlfriend, when she discovered him after he very quickly managed to un-Hulk himself, didn't really seem too concerned about him lying half naked on the beach.
No, well, he's probably like, oh, not this again. Oh, you can bleep that out. Sorry.
Yeah, oh, that's all good. That's all good. She's like in full jumper.
Oh, darn, not this again.
Yes, yes. She's like, you know, in full jumper jeans. She's all rugged up, and he's Banner laying half naked on an open beach with a dog licking him. And she doesn't seem overly concerned or surprised.
No, she's, well, he must have gone out and tied one on last night. Who hasn't woken up half naked on a beach with a dog licking them after a heavy night on the sauce?
Yeah, well, from what I could gather, it didn't actually seem like he'd actually been home for a couple of days at this point.
Oh, I've
or
had,
indeed.
Oh, look, I've
been
had,
in contact with her at all.
I've had drinking sessions like that. That's no big deal.
Well, even when she called out to him in the labs, when she was talking to the nosy reporter, she would have called out to him and then see him run away. You know, it's not really a good way to keep going with a relationship.
With a relationship,
that's straight from a coffee commercial.
No, exactly. You know, like one moment it's Nescafe, the next minute you're being ghosted. What's going on here?
But yeah, back we're digressing yet again.
Back to the plot. Back to the plot.
Back to all the fun, bizarre things that happen, because, of course, the bad guys know that this Banyan guy has a sweetheart.
He's got a sweetie.
So, yep. He's got a sweetie, so, of course, that's going to be their very, very next target.
Mm-hmm.
And how much resources do these guys have?
Oh,
because they...
Look, I reckon there must have been a trust fund for, you know, certain supervillain groups in the 1980s, you know, considering the amount of resources that they have at their disposal. And, you know, henchmen can't be cheap. Henchmen can't be cheap. It's not enough to have undying loyalty. You've got to have retirement plans. You've got to have at least the first 10 psychological evaluations free. You've got to have dental.
You've got to have one that can fly a helicopter that is basically painted up to look like a police helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. Like, where do they get their where do they get their resources? I reckon in another potential for crossovers, they're being funded by Spectre.
I've got nothing. Just like the Hulk and James Bond. That's quite a link.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the era where we can do crossovers and headcanons. So I reckon, back in the 1980s. When James Bond was very, very quiet and changing over from between Sean Connery to Roger Moore, Spectre was quietly funding all these little groups.
Yeah, or if we want to keep it within Marvel, they could have just been Hydra.
Yeah, true enough.
Because Hydra basically had everything at the disposal anyway.
Mm.
Oh, boy. But yeah, so as that's all going down, of course... Don and Thor both turn up, and instead of just running down the road, they come running across the water, and Don trips headfirst into the water and gets himself soaking wet, yet 5 minutes later is completely dry and no sand on him at all.
Yep. But his leather pants are still nice and shiny.
Absolutely, and Thor and Hulk have a nice little bonding session over trying to stop the helicopter getting away.
Mm. See, I think this... The style's quite different, you know, because this is and is not a modern ADHD adventure. The superpowers are quite limited. Thor is not actually, in this case, a god, but merely a strong Viking warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it stays true to the classical style TV sci-fi drama, and the moodiness of Banner is balanced by the joviality of Thor.
Thor has a great time, and he was my way into actually enjoying this movie. I've got to admit,
yeah,
it's just very hearty and just going, oh well, we shall go find them and rescue your lady.
And then there's poor old Lou Ferrigno, and he's sitting there going, God, I have to be painted green and put this bath mat on my head again.
And get called a troll.
Get called a troll
by Thor.
He does very little acting. But then again, he never really did much acting. His work was to look angry and do the action scenes. Bill Bixby was there to take care of the drama.
Very, very true. I won't comment on Lou Ferrigno's speaking voice. That doesn't seem like the best option.
Well, no, it wasn't. Well, the guy was pretty much clinically deaf, if I recall my Lou Ferrigno trivia correctly.
That's correct. In fact, they actually had to give him a bigger wig for this because of the size of his hearing aid at this point of his career.
Mm.
There you go. A little not funny aside.
Yeah, not funny aside. But, yes. And you know, I thought the overall tone of the movie at this point was, you know, quite melancholic with, you know, Banner never getting along with his angry side, whereas Donald and Thor get to find their balance.
Yeah, indeed. And it's like a nice little contrast, I suppose. I don't know if they were deliberately going for it. I mean, they really were trying to basically give Don and Thor chemistry and make them enjoyable because they wanted a TV series out of this.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole thing winds up with Bruce doing his walking off down the highway, hitchhiking with that sad piano playing in the background. Just like he did in the old show. And, you know, when I got to that bit, I was just like, oh, it's like I'm 10 years old all over again.
I've got to admit, I had a bit of a flashback then, too.
Yeah. I mean, for men of a certain age, i.e. ours, this is a nostalgic trip back to a hazy childhood. Not only that, but it's undoubtedly camp beyond belief. With not one, but two bodybuilders with their tops off. One of them in a bad blonde wig, one of them in a really bad green bath mat. And it was almost like a sci-fi version of one of those dreadful old Italian Hercules movies.
Dubbed or not dubbed?
Dubbed.
Dubbed. Okay, totally that makes dubbed. It even dodgier, doesn't it? Yes. Yes. But, I mean, we shouldn't be talking too much about the end of this just yet, because we have the whole action scene where they sneak up to the bad guys and, and like, you know, they summon Thor and there's lightning and things abounding. Then he just comes back into the world. Like, you know, Don goes, Odin! And he appears, immediately falls into some sheet metal. They're making all this noise, and yet the guards, not 10 meters away, don't even notice them.
I know, right? That bit, you could almost call that the slapstick moment.
You could call it the slapstick moment if it wasn't for the biker bar earlier.
Yeah, true. Well, I thought it was slapstick for that and for Lou Ferrigno throwing around really obviously badly made plastic and balsa wood girders.
Yeah, quite dodgily, and well, he picks up a, I don't know, what does he pick up? He picks up like a tire rim as a shield at one point against the bullets.
Yeah, something like that.
Probably not going to help you that much, but go for it.
Like, damn, Volkswagen knows what they're doing with these things.
And we, of course, we also get the very, the two of them doing the hero run side by side.
Yeah.
A very stirring moment.
Yeah, the music swells and... lumbering towards the camera.
Oh, yes. Obviously, I don't think we can say too much about that whole climactic scene. They turn up, They throw things at the bad guys. They either knock them out. I'm sure some of those bad guys probably have been killed and end up... Although Charles Napier gets killed at one point, I believe. He, like, crashes in a car or something that blows up and just leaves your mate Tim to be tied up in a girder and left for the police.
Yeah. Well, you know, tying people up in girders, you know, it's almost a staple these days with, like, ridiculously super strong heroes. Like, you got to tie them up in something made of metal.
And I tell you what, this movie took quite a while to end. I mean, they had the whole scene, like, in the evening with Banner cuddling up with his sweetheart.
Yep.
And basically, you think, are they staying together? Parting, they're talking like they're parting, but they still seem very, very snuggly, and he still stays the night before leaving in the morning, and then Don and Thor turn up to see him off.
Yeah, and it was that moment where you just go, no.
Yes, and then... do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- hitchhiking along the road, and the music started up again.
And they wrote that music, and then 15 years later, the Final Fantasy VII soundtrack comes out.
Very, very true.
Because,
You know, the Death of Eris has to have a much sadder song.
Yeah.
Oh, spoilers.
Oh, dude! Oh, no, seriously, if you haven't played Final Fantasy VII by now...
You're not going
to
play
you're probably not going to play it, so it doesn't matter.
Waiting for the remake doesn't count.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that remake. I've seen previews of it, and it looks so pretty.
Yeah, but does it need to be pretty? And shouldn't we be talking about Final Fantasy VII? Oh my god.
Maybe you should start a redeeming features one for video games as well as pinball.
Oh dear, the video game one probably would need a lot more effort than I actually have available to me. A lot more time.
You could totally turn it into a Let's Play on Twitch.
True. I'd have to reactivate my Twitch account for that. We can talk more about my YouTube stuff later when we're plugging stuff.
Yes.
Hint.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that pretty much wraps up The Incredible Hulk Returns. Brief bits of plot with action-y and irrelevant bits in between. I think that pretty much sums it up. So, Chris, I guess we need to know, is there anything redeemable about this movie, and is it redeemable overall? So, please, Chris, I would love to hear your thoughts first.
Okay, well... okay, well, as we intimated right at the start, one of the first things you're likely to read on the internet about this is that NBC hoped that the movie had spurred interest in a potential Thor TV show. Obviously, it didn't happen. And Thor's presence is generally kind of weird in this, because the Hulk TV show was basically grounded in a kind of scientific reality and didn't go into the supernatural. I mean, there may have been a few episodes that had a supernatural bent, but I'm pretty sure that the TV show never had anything like Thor in it at any point. And it makes me wonder why NBC didn't try to do the Thor pilot as its own thing, or didn't try to just make a Thor movie. I mean, it's cool to see Thor and the Hulk in the same story fighting and eventually teaming up to fight the bad guys, but again, it's also very weird when you consider the reputation of the TV show. And as I said, it's also weird to see Bill Bixby's David Banner happy. You know, I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say that, you know, at the end, as we said, it doesn't end well for Banner, and he has to give up whatever life he's managed to create by the end of the story. But it's also amazing to think that between the end of this movie and the start of the trial of the Incredible Hulk, that Banner's life managed to become so incredibly crap. I mean, when he leaves Maggie to go back on the road, Banner's sad, but he's not a basket case. But I watched, just for completion's sake, I watched the first 10 minutes of the trial of the Incredible Hulk, and my God, Banner has clearly been through hell. there. What the hell happened there? So anyway, back to the actual movie. I felt that the production value was shockingly good. Shockingly good. The technology on display in the Lambent Science Lab, as I said, looks high, low-budget movie good. The stunts and the fight scenes, they're well staged, they're moderately exciting. And the slow motion used when the Hulk appears, it's a franchise staple, but it's kind of off-putting the first time you see it, especially when Thor doesn't move in slow motion. But, you get used to it by the end. The Thor costume's functional, but Thor's hammer really isn't all that impressive. I mean, it's a biggish hammer, but it's not like the monster hammer that Chris Hemsworth has in the modern Marvel movies. But then, when you consider that Blake has to hold the hammer too, makes sense not to have it be gigantic and unliftable by anyone but Thor. What else have I got in my notes yet? Bill Bixby, usual classy self as Banner. Once again, it's weird to see him happy, but it's also fun to see him in a different light. And it's also interesting to see Banner hold himself together until the end, when he makes the standard decision he has to make when the Hulk emerges. He has to leave. And it was, I thought that was great stuff from Bixby. Lou Ferrigno, once again, kicks ass as Hulk. He doesn't do anything we haven't seen him do on the show or in the other movies, but still cool anyway. Steve Levitt, I felt, did a great job as Blake. Smart guy, stuck in a weird situation, and you can tell he's trying to make the best of it. And at the same time, he seems awfully confident talking to Banner, and before that, tracking Banner down. He had good friend chemistry with Eric Kramer, who plays Thor as the lovable giant douchebag rather than the rather dignified sort of character. Larger than life, he's arrogant, and he can back it all up in the ass-kicking departments, which was cool. And yeah, the biker bar partying, drinking montage in the middle of the movie, that was a hoot. And I assume an example of what we may have seen every week in a Thor TV show. To be honest, it's too bad that NBC didn't go for it and try it. I would have watched the hell out of it back then. And hell, if it was on DVD or Netflix, I'd probably be watching it right now. What else? Tim Thomason does his usual excellent job as the villain Jack LeBeau. I wish I knew what the hell his real deal is, but Thomason, when he's in full-on villain mode, he really knows how to pile on the sleaze, and LeBeau is a total sleazebag. I mean, just look at the way the guy plays racquetball. Charles Napier, who provided, as you said, the grunt noise of the Hulk on the TV show, he adds even more sleaze to the bad guy side of things, and it's fun to watch them argue and threaten to kill one another. And, you know, NBC could have had two TV shows if it really wanted to with this movie, a Thor TV show and a LeBeau and Fouché TV show, a hero show and a show about two dirtbags. You know, and to be perfectly honest, I bet someone would have tried that LeBeau and Fouché show today. Lee Purcell has great chemistry with Bill Bixby. She makes her character's relationship with Banner that much more believable, and that's what makes it a bit more heartbreaking at the end when Banner has to leave. And, you know, I'd love to know if Maggie ever tried to track Banner down later in her life. And I know that Banner would have told her to forget about him, but their bond would, at least to me, in my personal little headcanon, seem to necessitate a potential reunion in the future. And then there's Jack Colvin as Jack McGee. He only has a few scenes, but it's classic McGee stuff that was always fun to watch in the TV show. He wants to find the Hulk, man. Gotta find the Hulk! And it's too bad that Colvin apparently suffered a stroke after this movie was completed and didn't get to play in the Hulk universe again, because I would love to have known if he ever came close to finding the Hulk ever again. So, on the whole, for me, The Incredible Hulk Returns, it's a good low-budget superhero flick, and it's a great way to start off the Hulk TV movie trilogy. If you're a fan of the old TV show, you've got to sit down and take some time and watch it. And if you're a fan of well-made yet low-budget TV movies, the kind of movies that the major broadcast networks don't seem to be interested in making anymore, then, yeah, it's a must-see. And if you're a superhero movie nerd interested in how the superhero movie used to be, you definitely need to check it out before Ang Lee got all angsty with it. So I reckon awesome stuff. Definitely take the time to sit down and watch it. See it. I consider this film redeemed.
Ooh, wow.
Mm.
That's a Not in there.
I made proper notes this time instead of just a series of bad one-liner jokes.
Fair enough. That's a nice rundown. You've covered over quite a few of mine as well. So I think what I might do is just try to break mine down to some of the other points. It was fairly basic, I suppose, when you look at the plot and how it progressed. They certainly didn't get too adventurous in that side of things. I mean, I haven't seen the TV series in a very long time, but this really did stir a bit of familiarity and a bit of nostalgia in me, so that certainly helps. The performances were good all round. I would have liked to have seen the sweetheart. I've gone blank. You've just said her name, Lee.
Lee Percival.
I would have liked to see her have more agency rather than just be the damsel locked in a crate towards the end of the movie. Maybe have a bit more agency in helping to escape herself, which I think would have balanced out better with her being... like, she was the head of the biological science department. She was the head of it.
Yeah, I know.
This is a smart woman with a lot of agency who basically all that got forgotten after she became the damsel. Certainly, it was great to see a number of familiar faces, because Charles Napier, Bill Bixby, Tim Thomason, all strutting their stuff and doing quite good things.
Tim Thomason playing racquetball.
Oh, that was a vicious game of racquetball.
Wasn't it?
Oh, boy. Thor, to me, though, Thor really did steal the show. He was just lovable, especially, a scene we didn't mention was when the reporter tracked down Banyan's flat and rocks up. Thor goes out just wearing a towel and just absolutely goes to town on the reporter, and it's glorious. I was almost in tears in that. I was finding it so entertaining and funny. I don't really know if there's too much more to say that you haven't already said there, Chris. Mm. I mean, look, it's a dodgy movie. It's a dodgy TV movie, but it's a fun dodgy TV
it
movie.
It is.
And there were times when that was kind of like me going, this really is cheap and tacky. But I ended up having too much of a good time. And even when I wasn't particularly enjoying it, I was still having a decent time. So definitely, I say without a doubt, The Incredible Hulk Returns is totally redeemable.
Totally. And just as an end piece, I've actually got on the next page of my written notes just a series of like single bits and pieces. I'll just read a couple of them out to you. Nightmares, beach exercise, coffee, an equipment demonstration for the press, trespassing, flashback, some bull ... about Odin. A giant granite coffin, a big brawl, hammer to the face, roof jumping, clothes stealing, people playing racquetball, Tim Thomason playing racquetball, science lab tour, hilarious bar carnage montage, arm wrestling, dancing, silence a hooey, very deliberate flip and fall, truck door removal, helicopter attack, tranquilizer dart hooey, kidnapping, fridge issues, microwaving scientific equipment so it doesn't fall into the wrong hands, junkyard assault, out-of-control Mercedes, giant steel beam to the chest, hammer throwing, wild flip, total gun destruction, metal pipe bondage, Bill Bixby in comfortable white robe, a CD, Thor, Tim Thomason, multiple leper analogies, shirtless skateboarders, Buick on stilts, a drinking, arm wrestling and dancing montage, Charles Napier, oh my god, awesome. Charles Napier, OMG, awesome. New Orleans / Cajun polywaffle, the Hulk and Thor running together in slow motion. So that's my little list of stuff that really kind of tickled my fancy in the movie.
It was a nice rehash of pretty much the movie. There you go.
Yeah.
And plenty of stuff to tickle your fancy in this.
And the best line of dialogue in that entire movie for me was, to get a computer to somehow forget what it has learned seems blasphemous.
Okay, my favourite line, we've talked about favourite lines, was, I've got to find it now, I did have it noted down. I believe it was something that Don was saying to Thor before they started getting on. Hello, wipe up that milk that you spilt. It was a great line, and it wasn't literally spilt milk. It was basically Thor complaining about the fact that he had to keep being banished. And and yeah, so Don just saying, wipe up the book that you spilled. I think that was a really good line.
Matched only by "The Hound returns meekly to the kennel of Odin," which I've also got written down here.
Yes. In amongst all the Odin!
So yeah, no, this movie totally redeemed. Lots and lots of fun.
Absolutely. So we've redeemed it. Now, I've got a couple of extra comments. I did put the call out on Facebook to see if anybody had anything to say about The Incredible Hulk Returns. I've got a couple of impressions based solely on the photo of Thor and Hulk standing together outside the wrecked beach house, both with their mouths agape and Thor pointing his hammer. It's a brilliant picture.
It is a good pick.
I may have to make it one of the bits of artwork for this podcast. First up, Susie, my wonderful wife and co-host of What the History, which I should discuss in a moment.
Hi, Susie.
Came back with, "Words can't say how disturbed I am about this. It is messed up." And Brett also got on there, a bit more positive about it. "I get why movies can't do it these days, but there's something to be said for hamming and camping it up. It's a great sense of fun and tongue-in-cheek. We'll have to find it and watch it."
Mm-hmm.
Brett, find it and watch
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Do it!
Absolutely. Yep, indeed. So we redeemed
it. If for nothing else, just to see the giant metal boobies on Thor's chest plate.
Ah, those metal abs. Which very much get hidden by his real abs very much get hidden by his large woolen jumper.
Yep.
Yes. So we've redeemed it. We've got a bit of mixed thoughts there on the extra opinions that we get from Facebook. But you know what? I do like to finish on a high note because this movie does have its big, big fans. So I like to finish on a nice positive review to really round it all out. So the title of this one is "Great to Add to Your Hulk Collection." Great movie to add to your Hulk collection. Original cast. Only if you're a hardcore fan will you notice that Thor is not exactly the character you see in the comics. But hey, what do you expect for a made-for-TV movie? Plus, the star of the show is Hulk. Big Lou gets the job done and can still run. And Bill Bixby is awesome as always. I miss seeing him on TV.
Mm-hmm.
5 stars.
Well done. Well said.
Absolutely. So normally this is where we talk about what's coming next. So we are, as I said before, we're doing a few special episodes while Christian is away. So last episode, my wife Susie and I did a commentary for the Doctor Who TV movie, which is still available on the Rufus Project feed, as well as like a short and more podcasty version of that. And we're still working on what the next special episode is going to be, so we'll have to keep an eye on the Rufus Project on Facebook for that. So
yes,
before I go into more details, we probably should talk about things going on. So Chris, was there anything that you wanted to let people know that they might like to check out?
Well, I'm actually working on getting together the playlist and putting together some new tracks for a brand new episode, the usual once in a blue moon episode of my trip-hop, down-tempo and lo-fi podcast, Moonkissed, that you can find on www.mixcrate.com. So, yeah, look out for that in the coming days and weeks, because that'll be another, like, hour and a half of just fantastic lo-fi, down-tempo, chilled out trip hop sounds, perfect to, you know, like study to or to do it, get a bit of housework or the dishes done, or, you know, even fall asleep to.
Absolutely. It's a great way to chill out and relax. So definitely recommend that.
Mm. And you can also find the other episodes of Moonkissed on www.mixcrate.com/DJ_nemesis, which is my profile there. And, yeah, there's plenty of fantastic music on there. It's all very, very carefully curated. So, yeah, do yourself a favour and get into it.
Absolutely. Now,
what about you, Trevor?
Well, I'm still waging a bit of a war against my own spare time. Of course, we've got the Rufus Project. So you can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, where our full backlog is available. Follow us on Facebook, Rufus Project on Facebook, and also follow the Rufus Project YouTube channel, where not only can you get versions of the podcast with pretty pictures that change and move, I do more than just put a static image there, so it's worth looking at those on YouTube as opposed to other podcasts. And I also do regular live streaming of the old arcade and pinball titles, mainly as the one credit challenge to see how well I do on one credit. But there are other things as well. For instance, recently I did a full playthrough of the Captain America and the Avengers arcade game from 1991 as a shameless tie-in to Avengers Infinity War.
Oh, I loved yes, indeed. That game. I loved that game.
It was fun playing it, but it's definitely made for more than one player. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to check out something a bit different, I mentioned before, my wife Susie and I do another podcast called What the History, available at wthpod.rufusproject.com. We'll find the What the History podcast on Facebook. It's a nice short, around about 20 minutes an episode, where we talk about two bizarre bits of history to make you say what the history. So that's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, if you it's a haven't, lot of fun. If you haven't actually heard it, tune in. It's wonderfully done, it's well presented, and it really will make you scratch your head and go, holy smokes.
Indeed. Well, I managed to cover one of my favourite topics on the last episode, where I discussed pinball and the fact that it was prohibited in large parts of America for over 30 years. And keep in mind that alcohol prohibition only lasted about 13. So
wow.
There's a bit of what the history for you. So check that out. Okay, well, on that note, Chris, thank you again for jumping in and picking up for Christian's slack. Very much appreciated.
Not Christian a problem, mate. It's always a pleasure. No bloody Christian swanning about.
Yes.
No, seriously, though, Christian, if you're out there listening, we hope you're having an absolutely wonderful time.
Yeah, you do deserve it.
Yeah.
You work very hard,
the
man.
Guy works very hard, and quite frankly, he deserves a holiday.
He does, indeed. And Chris, when we get you back, I can't promise that it won't be another dodgy TV movie, but I will try.
Dude, if it's another Marvel thing, I'm going to know you're typecasting me.
Yeah, I don't mean typecaster, just kind of thinking, what can I get Chris to look at? Oh, that's right, that was that Hulk and Thor team-up from the 80s. Oh, yeah.
But thank you once again, Trevor. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always.
Well, thank you again, and we will be back with another special episode in a couple of weeks' time. So, like I said, just keep an eye on our social media for more updates, and it's basically a good place for the updates for the podcast and for the YouTube stuff. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much all that needs to be said.
And remember, folks, check out my podcast, or I'll kill you.
You can't argue with that. Okay, Chris, well, I look forward to next time we chat dodgy movies. And if you've got any comments or thoughts on what we've discussed about, I probably should mention that you can contact us via the website, the Facebook page, or send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. I almost forgot to give you the all-important email address. Sorry. Had too much fun. I was having too much fun.
Woo-hoo.
Farewell.
Take care, guys.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the bee, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Boy?